This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to Specsaver, sir. How can I help?
Hello. I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. For seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday
to me. Seniors get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. Well, how are you this morning on this 17th of August, Charlie?
I am absolutely brilliant. How are you?
I'm well. Enjoying the summer weather that continues. We had a little bit of rain last night. We're not getting as much as we thought, and I was kind of hoping for some, so I didn't have to set out the sprinklers.
Yeah, it's been a hot, dry last 10 days or so here at my place. We had a tiny bit of rain last night. We are expecting quite a bit overnight tonight and into tomorrow. So, yeah, that's always exciting. Right now, it's hot and dry and windy, overcast. I'm loving it too. It's just been a great summer. You know, we've had that nice warmth and sunshine, and yeah, boy, the harvest's coming out of the gardens right now. I bet we're just like with vegetables.
Good. Well, actually, that was my next question. What's sort of the thing this week in your garden? What's popping up more than anything? What's in abundance?
In abundance right now are herbs. I've got parsley coming out of my ears. So tabbouleh is on my to-do list this afternoon. Okay. And and my tomatoes are not really early tomatoes. I mean, many people have been harvesting tomatoes for weeks and weeks. I'm just on the cusp of bushel baskets, but not quite yet. Still, you know, I've got one or two coming in. But eggplants, two eggplant plants, woo, again, bushel baskets, red peppers, beans are just about done. But even reseeded lettuce, you know, leaf lettuce, because it's, you know, crapped out, of course, it always does in the heat. But started another crop, which is going to keep us going through the fall.
What do you typically do with all? Like, do you, you know, back in the day when I was growing up, my grandmother would can a lot of those things, but that's not as much of a thing these days as it used to be a generation ago for some people anyway.
Well, true. It has really caught on, though, with more and more home gardeners. Nice. It is an excellent way to preserve some of your harvest. So I'm not a big canner. Way back when I was a young person, I used to make jam quite a bit. You know, either pick strawberries or pick raspberries and make jam, which was fun. I mean, that's a form of canning. But now I'm mostly about freezing. I mean, we'll grill those eggplants. I've got baba ganoush I make with my eggplants. I got all kinds of eggplant things I do. But yep. I will end up freezing tomatoes for sure. And, you know, carrots keep for a long time. And I've got a bumper crop of sweet potatoes coming. And again, those, once they're cured, will keep for a long time.
Beautiful. Okay, well, I'm going to give out the numbers. And then after the show today, I'm jumping in my car and I'm coming down to your place to get some of your bounty there.
So. Salad.
You got it. Okay, numbers to call. If you live in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Or if you live outside Toronto, anywhere in the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. Okay, and do let Ashley know if you're a first-time caller. Because I will give you your garden wings. We want you to call often. We want you to call early, meaning right now. And we want one question per call, please. Okay? And we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Welcome to Specsaver, sir. How can I help?
Hello. I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. for seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday
to seniors get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yeah, we're back here on The Garden Show, and we're going to go right to our first caller, okay? We are going to go right to Jane, who's calling from Chatham. Welcome to The Garden Show, Jane.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
What do you got for Charlie there, Jane?
I have hostas that have been chewed up.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything I can do with them now for next year?
Sure, because probably what's chewing them up are either slugs or snails or both. And there's lots of good ways to control slugs and snails. One is, I know it's a waste of good beer, but it's quite magical. A little bowl of beer in the garden with a little bowl sunken down just below soil level so the slugs can easily access the bowl. And you would be surprised how many hundreds you can catch in one night because they do all their eating in the dark. So that's why you don't usually see them. You can also go out in the dark and you can pick them and squish them. There's okay. Bait out there. It's called slug and snail bait. It works very, very well. Just follow the instructions. Even believe it or not, the mollusks, that like the way a mollusk moves, right, it lays down what they call a slime trail. So it puts this liquid down and it slides on the liquid, which is slimy. And they will not cross a copper barrier. They get an electric charge if they put their slime onto copper and slide on it. So sometimes if you've got those pennies kicking around and you don't know what to do with them, sometimes people will put the pennies around the hostas on the surface of the soil and keep those slugs and snails from crossing in and eating their hostas.
Well, I like that one. I've got all kinds of pennies.
There you go. You can also buy copper wire, copper ribbon, basically is what it is, from, I believe, Lee Valley Tools has it. And again, it's pretty. You kind of lay it around the hostas, and again, they won't cross it. So it's a very natural way of keeping them out of, I mean, they're going to be in your garden. The birds will eat them, the frogs will eat them, lots of snakes will eat them, but you just don't want them eating your hostas.
What was that word that you mentioned, mollusk or something?
Which word?
In what
slugs?
Context, Jane?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay,
so they're slugs or snails. Oh, they're mollusks. M-O-L-L-U-S-K. A mollusk is what they are. They're not insects. They're not reptiles. They're not amphibians. They're mollusks.
Okay. I thought that was something to give them.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. I'll try that.
Okay.
Thanks,
Jane. Yeah, you know what? I was fascinated by that. I thought, well, holy cow, with the copper. And I too have a big jar of pennies, like a big jar.
Everybody does.
A big jar of pennies.
And what are you going to do with them?
Right. Well, now I know. Now I know what I can do.
Yeah, you know what you're going to do with them.
That's it. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Teresa calling from Mississauga. Welcome to The Garden Show, Teresa.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning.
I have a question. I have, I like to separate my large lavender and spirea bushes. When is the best time to do it? This fall or should I wait till the spring?
Okay, so lavender and spirea are two good examples of plants we don't really divide per se, not like we would divide a hosta or a daylily. So if you take a shovel and you chop those plants in half any time of the year, I think you'll find that it won't work. It might work, but it's not the best way to propagate. If you want more lavender and more spirea, then use cuttings. Just do tip cuttings, 6 inches long, preferably take your cuttings in around May or June, root them and get them either into pots or into the garden that summer. And then of course they're small, but they will grow. And sometimes people will just take their little cuttings, get them rooted up in little pots, and then keep the little pot, them, the plants in pots, but bury the pots for the winter, bring them up the next spring, you know, at some point put them in their final location.
Well, what I like to do, it's, they're getting too big for where they're situated. I just like to make them smaller.
Pruning is always an option with a spirea. Do you know what kind of spirea it is, roughly?
Oh, I've had it for years and years and years.
Is it pink flowers or white?
Yes.
Which color?
Pink. Pinkish, reddish pink.
Okay, so what I would do with a spirea that's got pink flowers, likely it's one of them, you know, Anthony Water or one of those, this fall or early next spring, you choose, get out your big loppers and just cut that plant right down half or smaller. Like you can go really hard on that plant. Prune it right down.
Do I dig it out and then cut it and then replant it?
No, leave it where it is and then let it grow back. Well, I mean, I guess it depends how much too big it is. But if you want it to be 3 feet by 3 feet and it's currently 5 feet by 5 feet, then bring it down to 2 feet by 2 feet and next year it'll be your perfect size.
Okay, okay. And the same with the lavender. Can I dig it out, cut it in half and replant it?
Yeah, this little trick here with lavender, but you're in Mississauga, so maybe. I find lavender sometimes a little finicky, but you should always trim your lavender at this time of year.
Oh, okay.
It will have finished flowering, so we cut off all the flowers, and then we cut it down by about a third of the new growth. Yes, if it's really too big, okay, cut it down by a half. And don't necessarily do that right now. Wait until more like September and you can hard prune your lavender and it'll probably help. But or dig it, move it somewhere else in the garden.
Okay. And Dean, thank you very much for that lemon lavender scone recipe. It's delicious.
Oh, you're welcome. I'll have to throw that out again to the listeners.
Delicious. Yes.
You've reminded
I dry
me.
My lavender
my kids
flowers
me.
And then I use them in my scone.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Teresa.
You too.
So I need to do that too. I have a lavender I guess, is it a bush? What is it? I have a lavender patch.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's almost like a small shrub, right?
Yes.
Because remember, it's not a herbaceous perennial. If it like a hosta, it doesn't disappear in the winter. But it is a perennial because it's there forever and ever and ever for years.
Yes.
So it's what we would call a woody perennial because it's got the woodiness to it. But it's like a small shrub, really.
Okay. Well, you've reminded me that I have to do that too. I don't always do that. I often don't. I sort of just forget about it after it's bloomed and leave it. And it sounds like it will be better for the plant and the way it comes in next year if I do that pruning in September.
Yes, yes, all lavenders. Well, it's just a nice way to tidy them up. They tend to get all kind of leggy and rangy and not, I mean, they're attractive because they're lavenders, but not a really attractive plant. You know, they just, so it's your opportunity to shape it, to maximize its beauty.
Okay, excellent. We're going to go to a break in just a moment. I'm going to give the numbers out again. And you know what? Again, call early because you need to get in line because otherwise we might not get time for your call. So call us now, 416-360-0740, 1-866-740-4740. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Welcome to Specsavers, sir. How can I help?
Hello, I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. For seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday
to me. Seniors get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, storks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show. And Charlie, we just came out of an ad for the Canadian National Exhibition, the X, which began yesterday. It opened yesterday, goes right through to September the 2nd. And you, my friend, are going to be one of the guest gardeners speakers on the 31st of August, right?
That's right. So that's what, 2 weeks from today? What day is
I believe
today?
So. Yeah.
Yeah, 2 weeks from today, I will be at the Canadian National Exhibition. 2 p.m., I'm on stage. I believe it's called the Celebrity Kitchen Stage or some such thing. It's in the main building there, what used to be the Direct Energy Center, which is now the Enercare Center, I think. So that big, massive building with parking beneath. And 2 p.m., gardening in a changing climate. So that's going to be fun. And it's always fun to check out the X. Takes me back to my childhood.
Yeah, so that'll more than likely, we're planning on that being an in-studio day. And then we'll, like I said, it sounds like a road trip for you. Well, you have to be there. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a road trip for Ashy and I, too.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll holler stuff from the audience as you're, you know.
I love hecklers. Hecklers.
Well, just when you say something, Ashley and I'll just start laughing from the back of the room.
She doesn't know what she's talking about.
It'll be fun. Okay, we're going to go right now to our next caller. We've got Mary calling from Toronto. Welcome to the Garden Show, Mary.
Well, good morning to both of you. Charlie, on that last one about the hostas, one patch of mine were eaten. Would laying down copper wire do the same thing? I'm not sure how many pennies I kept.
The trick is, if it's just a single strand of wire...
Oh, no, I would lay down a lot, because I have quite a bit of it.
Okay. The main thing is their little bodies can't be grounded. They've got to be on the copper in order for it to be effective. So it's just a skinny little piece of copper, then they've still got a ground, because they've still got contact with the ground. So whatever, if it's, you know, wide enough... wire where they actually have to climb, you know, slither over the wire and be only on the wire, then yeah, that'll work.
Okay. Well, the reason I'm calling is by sheer determination, I guess that's the best word. Both my orchids, the one my niece gave me 2-3 years ago, and that one sent up a second shoot. I cut the other one off, has wonderful buds. I have no idea how long it takes for them to open. You could give me an idea. And I think my original little one also, by now it's about a month, both of them sent up flower, you know, whatever with buds. But, and possibly I overwatered. The odd time I do, but then I let them, I take newspaper and let them sit on it. The leaves on both of them are quite limp. Normally they're very... firm and shiny. What have I done? Right. On the big one, the middle leaf that's growing, it's like the regular one.
Okay. So that's a couple important things to note. If you have new growth at the top of the plant, new leaves emerging, that's a good sign, because you always want to have new leaves coming from the center top of the plant, and you expect that the older, more mature leaves at the bottom of the plant eventually start to turn yellow and eventually die. A healthy orchid has minimum 3 or 4 leaves on the plant. If it's more than 3 or 4 leaves, then it's an even happier plant, because it's able to just photosynthesize and it's just telling you how happy it is. But if you're down to only, you know, 1 or 2 leaves, then you know this is a struggling plant. If you feel that you might have overwatered it, which is definitely a possibility, because we do get excited sometimes when we see flowers coming, I would lay the plant on the side. If you can, slip the plant out of the pot and smell it. Smell the roots, or even just smell it without pulling out of the pot. If it smells swampy, if it smells like there is rot going on, then I would seriously consider repotting both those plants into fresh media. It could be the orchid bark that you go into, or it could be sphagnum moss, one or the other. And and you'll know by the smell. If it does smell kind of swampy, like there's some rot going on, when you do the repotting, have some sharp scissors in your hand and trim off any brown, black, mushy roots or any plant parts that are not firm and happy and healthy before you repot back into the same size pot. You don't necessarily have to go up a size unless you know, it's been many, many years in the same pot.
Oh, okay. It doesn't smell. I mean, every time I look at it and take it out. And I do have new orchid bark that I was going to use months ago, but then it started, you know, as they say. And the big one has lots of leaves, and the other one has at least four or five, like, normal.
Good. Yeah, good.
Oh, but
yeah,
that's
so
a good hint.
Don't panic. Just don't
do
water.
That. I never thought of taking it out.
Yeah, it's when we worry that we overwater something, then just let it really dry down. And it's hard with the bark to know when it's dry. I usually base my analysis on the weight of the pot. Once it gets very light, I know it's truly dry. And when I do water, I do the immersion watering, like right into a pail of room temperature water where I sink the pot under the water. And then again, it might be weeks before I water again.
Well, what I
okay, thanks for the call there, Mary. Yeah, sorry, we have lots of callers on the line. We have to scoot. We're going to go now to, we have Barbie calling from Burlington. Welcome to the Garden Show, Barbie.
Thank you very much, and hello, Charlie and Dean. My question for you is, I had planted Muscari bulbs, and after they've bloomed, we have these little dry stems with bell-shaped pods on them and little black seeds. Will they grow from seed? I thought it was a bulb.
Yeah, so, they will. That's one of the things we love about Muscari, also known as grape hyacinth. You plant 10, and then you've got 20, and then you've got 50, and then you've got 100. So they will, yes, the seeds will sprout eventually. They will not flower necessarily the first year. So it's a process. You've got to give this, you know, the expansion of your Muscari bed time. But yes, indeed, they will, the seeds will grow and more little plants will grow and more flowers will emerge.
So I would have to plant, put the seeds on the ground and overwinter. I couldn't just start growing them under lights.
No, I wouldn't. Like, why bother?
No, okay.
They're hard to transplant. Any tiny bulb is hard to transplant. I would let them do their thing. Like, if frankly, at this point, I'd be surprised if the seeds haven't really dropped to the ground, if there's still that many seeds attached. So I would be inclined to just let them be, let them do their, just take your fingers and run your fingers over those brown stems and all those seeds will drop. And just, you know, as you're going through cleaning up, because the yellow, the old flower stems are just yellow or white. They're not very pretty. So just run your fingers through, combing them, if you will, and pull out all that debris. But meanwhile, a bunch of seeds will drop.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That's a great idea.
Okay. Good stuff.
Thanks so much for the call there, Barbie. Charlie, just before we move on to our next caller, I want to draw attention to an email that really kind of weirded me out. That you got. Yeah. The subject was yikes with four exclamation marks. And I understand why. The email basically sent you a picture and said, this guy is huge. Tomato hornworm, I believe. Yes. Voracious eater. I discovered, they refer to it as a him. I suppose it could be a her. Discovered it this morning. And that's from Maria. And that is just overwhelming to see that size of that species.
They can get really big, really big, like surprisingly big. They're like monsters. Yes, indeed. I pulled one off one of my tomatoes the other day. It was at least 5 inches long.
Wow.
And you know, it's funny. So though, how do you and they're perfectly camouflaged. Their color is exactly the same color as your tomato. And they lie on the branch or the stem.
Yep.
And so they're perfectly lined up, usually with the plant. So a little tough to spot until they're so big you can't miss them. But when they're that big and they're eating so much, you will know you have tomato hornworms by the fact that there's leaves missing all of a sudden in an area of a plant. You know there's a hornworm there somewhere. So you stand there and you study the plant until you find the hornworm. They wouldn't be so bad if they just ate the leaves, but they actually eat the tomatoes as well. They are quite voracious. So I'm not, I'd love to talk a bit more about caterpillars and larvae, because of course that hornworm becomes a moth. So it does move on at some point and stop eating our tomatoes. And it's a rather beautiful moth. And it is a piece of nature, so you could say, well, I've got lots of tomato leaves, let it eat. Don't worry about it. But I personally do drown them. I do with them just what I do with the Japanese beetles, which is that little, I have a yogurt container with water in it and a few drops of soap. And, you peel that hornworm, like they hold on. Like, they, you almost need a vise to get them off the plant and drop them into the water. They're quite the creatures.
Wow. Okay. And again, just a thought on my brain in line with Mary's call when she was calling and asking about her orchids. I think I'm getting my hankering to maybe have Terry Kennedy back on the show sometime down the line, because she's so knowledgeable about the orchids. I have a few of them as well, and I have questions from time to time.
Okay, well, I'll book her. Okay, Jack, we need you on the show because Dean needs you on the show. Forget everybody else. Dean has a big list of questions.
I have a list of questions.
But, just quickly while I'm thinking about it, the fact that those tomato hornworms are eating our tomato leaves, that's something that I find it's an interesting sort of a brain connection. So, how butterfly gardens are such a rage, right? Yep. Support the butterflies, support the bees, support the pollinators. And of course, I'm getting all kinds of butterflies flittering all over my yard at this time of year. So we love butterflies. We think they're beautiful. They do a lot of great things. So yes, let's support butterflies. But the big part that's that we have to also acknowledge is that what becomes a butterfly starts as an ugly caterpillar or a chewing caterpillar, a hungry caterpillar, also known as a larva. So you've got to recognize that if you're going to support butterflies, you've got to support plants being eaten in your garden. Now, the slugs that are eating the hostas are a little different. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about parsley as an example, or dill. A friend of mine said to me the other day, she said, last year there was this caterpillar eating my dill and it was pissing me off. So I smushed it. And then I looked it up and I realized it was a swallowtail butterfly larva.
Right.
So then she was so regretful that she had killed this, what was going to become a beautiful butterfly, but it was eating her dill. So that's the thing, is realize that when you've got stuff getting eaten, take a step back and look at what is doing the eating. And then, you can look it up and discover whether this is something that you want to kill, like a tomato hornworm, or something you want to maintain. I mean, I've got lots of milkweed on my property. I've got a lot of things eating my milkweed. Mm-hmm. Turns out that's not just monarchs that eat milkweed. I know monarch butterflies only as a larva only eat milkweed. Turns out there's quite a few other creatures that only eat milkweed too. It makes them poisonous, right? And so I've got different things eating my milkweed, including something called a milkweed tiger moth, if you want to look that up. I've got American painted lady larva eating something called helichrysum in my pots out front. So there it is, my pots out front, my beautiful container gardens are being chewed up. I'm like, oh no, what do I do? I'm leaving them alone, let them eat, because they're going to become American painted lady butterflies. Look that up, beautiful butterfly. Parsley always every year gets chewed by the swallowtail. So just know that when something's getting chewed, it's not always something you need to control.
Right, because that's part of the cycle.
Exactly.
Okay.
You want butterflies.
Absolutely. Part of our cycle is to take commercial breaks. We're going to do one right now, and then we'll be back with much more on The Garden Show.
Welcome to Specsaver, sir. How can I help?
Hello. I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. For seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday.
Seniors
to
get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show, and we are, we're enjoying our summer weather. Of course, things are in abundance right now. The weather seems to be quite conducive. Would you call it a good growing season, Charlie?
It has been at my place. as long as we get that consistent rain, right?
Yeah.
Lots of heat with rain every 7 to 10 days, we're good. I mean, certainly based on the height of the corn, I'd say the farmers are having a great year too, because you know, the rule is you want the corn to be knee high by the 4th of July.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So if it's knee high by the 4th of July, it'll work. It'll be a great crop. If it's smaller than that, because it was a dry spring, then the crop won't be as extensive. So yep, it was well over knee high this year.
Excellent. We have enjoyed some nice corn of late.
Yeah.
You know, because corns are not all created equal, right? And so different types, different crops can be different.
Yeah.
But I picked up some really nice corn last week at the Collingwood Market and have been enjoying it this week.
Oh, yeah. We've been eating corn like every night. Yeah. No, I don't grow it. Partially because it takes a ton of space, partially because it's just, whatever. And you also have to, it cross-pollinates. So you don't just plant one kind of corn. You have to plant multi-kinds of corn. Anyway, I'm not doing that. I'm not a farmer. But I certainly appreciate my local farmer's bounty.
Absolutely. You and me as well. Okay, we're going to go now to Jean calling from Newmarket. Welcome to the Garden Show, Jean.
Good morning. First, I want to give a shout out to Ashley. She is your unsung hero. I know you announce her at the end, but she's always pleasant and efficient. And Charlie, you know that I am a very much a novice from COVID, but you are my heroine. Oh my God, I can do anything now as long as I do what Charlie says. We have a 35-year-old daughter who's going, Charlie says, Charlie says, Charlie says. Just jealousy. She'll go and touch my flowers and say, they're not real, they're silk, because that's what I used to do, put in silk flowers. Anyway, please.
Oh, good.
When can I put on grass fertilizer?
Okay, so if you follow my way of doing things, you only fertilize your grass once a year, and you do it with a fall fertilizer, and you do it in the fall. Usually I'm fertilizing in either October or November, depending on the weather, and I try to, you fertilize usually right after you've done a mowing of the lawn. And remember that the final mowing at the end of the season is the shortest one of the entire year. Again, that's probably mid to late November by then.
Thank you. I don't have to work for a little bit. Thank you very much.
No. That's all. Don't. I mean, I just remember synthetic fertilizers are great. They do feed our lawns, and what are our lawns other than billions of plants all mushed together? So they do need nutrients. But I don't want my lawn to be on steroids. Like, I don't want it to rely on artificial food. I want it to find its own food in the soil and from the air and from, you know, whatever's all the life. There's lots of life in the soil if you've got a healthy soil.
I know my husband's flailing his arms. What is the ratio that we buy? 6-6 or whatever?
Actually look for a package that says fall fertilizer or winterizer fertilizer. Certainly Scott's makes one. I'm not seeing it right here quickly. It's a red bag. Oh, wait, there it is. So Scott's makes a turf builder. Is that it? Or that might be the crabgrass. Where is it? Show me.
Charlie, we can check that and have it out by the end of the show.
Okay,
how's that?
Thank
okay,
you. Gene? No worries. Bye now.
Thanks for calling,
Gene. I got to tell you, you know, what you were just saying about lawns finding their own fertilizer. a little chuckle I've had, which my wife has acknowledged. And that is that when I put up my bird feeders, of course, initially, and this is in the last year, I had two poles in the same area. And all this stuff was falling, and she made the comment. She says, your bird feeders better not kill my grass under there. And the laugh is that it is under the bird feeders that the grass is growing best because of all of the stuff that has fallen and all of the waste from the birds.
I was going to say. Well, and I get sunflowers growing at the bottom of my bird feeders sometimes too. So I do, if you're feeding sunflowers and you get all those empty shells, they do pile up beneath the bird feeder, and that will ultimately kill the grass. So every now and then you have to rake the shells, just rake them out loosely out onto the rest of the grass. I also have a pair, I think a mated pair of raccoons that come through every night around 11 o'clock to snuffle around at the bottom of the bird feeders and clean up any seeds that the birds have missed.
Yeah, that's true. We have some chipmunks. We have the squirrels. We have a whole, you know. But now she wants me to move my bird feeders around different parts of the lawn so that she can get the same fertilized days.
That can be hard to do.
It could be.
And it confuses the birds, too.
It does as well. Absolutely. Okay, let's go to our next caller. We have Judy calling from Puslinch. And Judy, you're a first-time caller. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm giving you your garden wings. There you go. Welcome to the Garden Show.
I have a problem with blight, tomato blight. I had it last year. So then this year I created another garden. It is still about 3 feet close to the old one with new dirt and everything. And raised all my own seed plants, and they all came up really good. Did about 75 tomato plants, and I've got blight all over again. I read about stuff you can get on the internet, but I don't know if you can believe it, if it's worth spending the money. And there you go.
Okay, so that's a lot of tomato plants. So there's different kinds of blight, right? There's early blight, mid blight, and late blight. The early and the mid blights can be controlled. The late blight usually kills the plants very quickly. So it kind of depends exactly how the plants are going down. But remember some important things here. One of the reasons we get blight on our tomatoes is environmental. It's hot days, humid nights, insufficient air circulation and insufficient sun penetration into the plants. So if you're growing 75 tomatoes, I have to assume you're on an acreage to do that, because in order for those tomatoes to get enough sun and enough air, they need to be planted several feet apart, not all jammed into like a big forest, or worse yet, not staked and on the ground.
Okay. Well, they are on the ground. They probably don't have a much space. Yes, I have 100 acres, so I do have a lot of land. But this area that I have to plant them close to my barn where I have access to the water. And, and maybe I have them too close. I've got three different varieties. I used to be a really successful tomato grower, but I used to stake them. And I never staked any of these, but I didn't know there was early, mid, and late, so I pulled 90% of them all out. So I don't know if I can save any that are left. I tried to pick all the tomatoes. It didn't look like they had any spots to see if I could get them to, ripen in the house or something.
Yeah, they often will.
And
if they're green or slightly, you can often bring them up to a quite edible. Yeah. So you pulled them. What did you do with the tomatoes you pulled? The plants?
The tomatoes that I pulled, I fed them to my chickens.
Okay. And the plants?
The plants, I put them on my fire pile, which is quite a piece away.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, best way to eliminate or limit the spread of things like blight is to annihilate the plants. Exactly. So whether in this for the city dweller or suburban person, this would be bagging into the paper bags, end of the driveway, off your property. Or in the case of the rural gardener, such as yourself, that's a burn. That's a burn pile for sure. Mm-hmm. You do not want to keep that as a compostable product. Because it's a spore. These are fungal spores, and they do overwinter in the soil. So what I would probably do in your case next year is, like, sounds great that you put them in a different spot and you've freshened the soil. Plant fewer tomatoes if you can. Give them more space and see if you can avoid that blight that way. And, of course, pray for lower humidity as well.
Mm-hmm. And does it hurt to the blight-resistant seeds are, is it worth doing them or?
Good question. I can't say that I'm aware of specifically blight. Did you see that on the web somewhere, blight-resistant?
One of the seed packets said blight resistant, and I know when I buy the tomatoes, I did buy one variety of tomato, and the person said it was blight resistant, the nursery that I bought it from.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah, I guess there has been some breeding going on for sure. I'm quickly looking here. Paoline, Gourmand Sun, these are blight resistant, but tomatoes, Buffalo Sun, Honeymoon. Yeah, I have never grown any of those. Certainly the tomatoes are definitely susceptible to a bunch of things. And as we mentioned earlier, tomato hornworms as well. So Verticillium, so VFN, when you see the little tag and a tomato with a name, and it's got a capital V, capital F, capital N, it means that those plants are resistant to Verticillium, Fusarium, and nematodes. So nematodes aren't a big issue here in Ontario usually, but Verticillium and Fusarium are diseases that will kill the plants. So yes, always do the VFN when it comes to, yeah, we can talk more about that. I think it's probably worth doing a bit of research and seeing what's out there that will you'll like. Because just because a plant, a tomato is resistant doesn't mean you're going to like the tomato.
Gotcha. Uh-huh. We have to run. I'm sorry. We have to go to break. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Welcome to Specsaver, sir. How can I help?
Hello. I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. For seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday
to seniors get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yes, we're back here on The Garden Show. Charlie, let's jump into our next caller here, Bob, on the line. Bob is calling from Toronto. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Thank you. I have a question pertaining to roses. I have about 10 or 12, some in the back and some in the front of the house. And for this year, for some reason, the leaves have all turned yellow and black spots on them and fallen off. Is that just because of the heat and the rain, or is that should I dig them out and replace them?
So probably if you've got as many as 10 roses, they're probably not all the same variety. So you likely have some roses are more defoliated than others. Maybe one or two is fine. Perfectly green leaves. Because you're absolutely right. I mean, you mentioned it, black spots. There is a fungal disease called black spot. And it does start with little black spots that coalesce and turn yellow, and then early defoliation occurs. So yes, there are roses that are completely resistant to black spot. Last week we were talking about knockout roses. Knockouts are an excellent whole group of roses that are completely resistant to mildew, powdery mildew, and black spot. So many people love them because they're low maintenance. They don't require a lot of care, spraying, cleaning up. For you, good garden hygiene, make sure any of those diseased leaves have been cleaned up if you possibly can, preferably removed from the property, again, to avoid spreading the disease. It's a source of inoculum to have the leaves sitting on the surface of the soil and reinfecting the plant. Yes, it is environmentally based, and it is also based on the rose variety being more or less susceptible to the problem of black spot. Yeah, high humidity leads to all kinds of fungal diseases, and there's been lots and lots of rain in your area this summer, so it's probably just exactly what's going on there.
Great. Thank you. I'll give it a shot.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, thanks there, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's we were talking off air a little bit about this, about, you know, I had the same question. It just seems that when you've got high heat, high humidity, right, it's so often about the balance. Right?
It's true. It's true. And we don't, it's so hard to anticipate how big a plant is going to get. I mean, I'm guilty of it. So don't feel bad. I'm sure we've all done this, where we plant something, envisioning how it's going to look, and then 3 or 4 years later go, oh my goodness, this is just not in the right place. this is growing way bigger than I expected. And it's really interfering with the plant next to it. I planted a lilac and a magnolia, if you can imagine, too close together, and one of them has to move. And I think I'll move the lilac. I think it'll be easier to move. But they're you know, you can't tell the difference. Where's the magnolia and where's the lilac? They've completely just a mass, a wall of green. And sure, they flower and stuff, but it's just not pretty. They need to stand as specimens. And tomatoes, you know, you and I were saying, you know, you plant a little tomato seedling, it's 3 inches tall. And you got to remember that in 3 months, it's going to be 10 feet tall and 4 feet wide. If it's a happy plant, which we hope our tomatoes will be. And certainly you can stake or not stake. I never have stakes big enough for my tomatoes. They grow so tall. So I tend to grow what's called a determinant tomato. So one that doesn't keep growing forever and ever. It only gets to about 3.5 feet tall and stops. So it's about a meter by a meter size plant when it's mature. And it doesn't, frankly, grow as many tomato fruits as an indeterminate big tall tomato, but plenty for us.
Part of the problem that I experience, quite frankly, is buying seeds, because sometimes you buy seeds and you only have one row in your garden because you're in a smaller spot, but you have hundreds of seeds in the packet. And it seems wrong to take all those seeds and plant 13 of them and then throw the other 200 out. But I mean, I think that's why sometimes we plant too much.
Perhaps. No, you're right. And the other thing is, many seeds are something you can keep for more than one season. Not all, but many are. So tomato seeds are good for easy 2-3 years, maybe 4 years. So I think a lot of the seed suppliers know that now too. They're packing fewer seeds into the packages. You're only getting maybe 25 in the package instead of 100. So that helps too. That's like a 2 or 3 year supply.
And look at that. We're done.
Oh my gosh. Where'd it go? Where'd that hour go? Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
Thanks for being my friend on the show. Thanks, Ashley, for being the magical person that you are, the wizard, the nicest, most efficient phone answerer in the world. So thanks for that, Ashley. Thanks for all the great callers. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Welcome to Specsavers, sir. How can I help?
Hello. I'm a senior, and I've heard that for eligible seniors, of which I am one, Specsavers are giving 50% off lens upgrades on their glasses, like thinner and lighter lenses or a sun tint. For seniors.
You don't look senior. You have to be 65 or over to get this offer.
Here's my ID, which is definitely not a fake.
Yeah, this says you were born in 1877.
Happy birthday
to seniors get 50% off lens upgrades at Specsavers. Conditions and exclusions apply. See specsavers.ca.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.